South Africa is mourning the loss of one of its most memorable anti-apartheid voices. Author Nadine Gordimer was 90 years old. Gordimer won the Nobel Prize for her novels exploring the depths of racial conflict in apartheid-era South Africa. Her biographer, Stephen Klinger, spoke with our colleagues at the BBC earlier and remembered Gordimer this way.
She remained first and foremost a writer. Later on, she said that nothing she wrote would be as true as her fiction. But as everybody knows, she was also a tremendously courageous person, standing up against apartheid, standing up against censorship, speaking her mind on any and every topic. A really extraordinary individual.
For many South Africans, Gordimer's impact continued well beyond the nation's transition to majority rule in 1994. Here's how novelist and journalist Zukiswa Vanner puts it.
When you talk about Nadine Gordimer in a South African literary landscape, you can't forget to mention how much she was so important to all of us and how much she just managed to straddle, you know, pre-94 and post-94 and fit in and just make us feel, she made everybody just feel like an equal, you know, like one writer to another. And that was amazing about her.
One American writer who counted Nadine Gordimer among his friends is Adam Hochschild. Adam, what was your reaction today when you heard Nadine Gordimer had died?
I was very sad because she was a great writer and also a fine human being. At least in my experience with her, she was very kind and generous to me and my work in a way that older writers often are not to younger writers. And I really treasure the memories of times I spent with her in South Africa.
How did you meet her?
I think I first met her over the telephone. I was an editor at Mother Jones magazine, and we published an excerpt from a novel of hers.
What year was this?
This would have been the late 1970s, and I think it was the novel July's People, if I'm not mistaken. And I remember I called her up and said, we've edited it this particular way and picked this section and that section. And she said, nope, that won't do. It'll have to be a different way. I want you to do this section and this section and this section. She was obviously somebody who had a very clear idea of how she wanted her writing to come out in print. And an editor should not stand in the way. And since that's who she was, we ran the excerpt the way that she wanted it. And that was the first time I dealt with her. And then a couple of years later, I published my first book. And I just sent her a copy because I had an address, but I don't think I'd met her at that point. And then I got back the most extraordinarily warm letter. And then she put a P.S. on the bottom. She said, use any quotation you want for this letter for publicity purposes, which, of course, is something I hadn't asked her for. It's absolute gold to a writer who's writing his first book. And it was just a very generous thing for her to do. Then a couple of years after that, I was in South Africa on a reporting trip gathering material for my second book. And very, very timidly, I called her up. I'd managed to get her telephone number. I called her up and said, I'm here. You may remember me. You wrote me that nice letter. Could I come and see you? And she said it was this sort of, again, this peculiar mixture, this experience of her being very definite about how things should be and at the same time very warm. She said, I couldn't possibly see you. I'm terribly busy this month. Every day I'm going to the Delmas trial. The Delmas trial was a huge political trial that went on in South Africa for 3 years, the biggest political trial during the tail end of the apartheid period. She said, I'm going there every day. The trial's in Pretoria. It's an hour and a half's drive. Couldn't possibly see you. And very timidly, I asked, well, could I come with you tomorrow? And she thought for a moment, and she said, yes, but you must be at my house at 7:30 in the morning sharp. And if you're not here, I'll leave without you.
So you were able to accompany her to this trial. And what happened there?
There were these 16 or 17 guys on trial. They were eventually found guilty after a 3-year trial. And then by that point, the change, you know, the abandonment of apartheid was underway and the Supreme Court of the country reversed their verdict. But they thought they were all going to be sent away for 15 or 20 years. The previous week, she herself had testified at this trial The defense lawyers had called her as a witness, as someone who would be willing to speak out to say that the African National Congress should not be banned. I'm a supporter. I regard Nelson Mandela as my leader. And she had done all this. And the defense lawyers were thrilled with this. And they took us all to lunch during the day that we were at the trial.
I'm curious, we think of her in the U.S. as primarily a writer, and in South Africa, she really played this key role in the anti-apartheid movement. I mean, is she still, do you believe, consider a kind of anti-apartheid icon there?
Yes, I think so, because she did more than just write. She sometimes sheltered people who had to go underground. I think in the early days, the authorities didn't quite realize who she was, and also didn't expect to find, you know, a black political leader sheltering in a white person's house. In later days, I suspect that they didn't want to do something like arrest somebody at Nadine Gordimer's house because they knew that would be on front pages all over the world. So she did shelter people. I know that she, on occasion, you know, drove somebody to the border. These were not things that she told me herself. I heard them from other people. She did not in any way brag about the things that she had done.
Adam Hochschild is the author of King Leopold's Ghost, among many other books. Thanks, Adam.
Thank you, Carol.
Before we go, we want to play just one more recording of the late Nadine Gordimer for you. Here she is just 2 years ago talking about democracy in South Africa.
Well, it's a very troubled scene at present. But one has to remind oneself, we have been free for 18 years this year. That's not even a generation. And all the rest of you, in many parts of the world, you have been generations and hundreds of years building a democracy. You still don't have a perfect democracy. You still have a great gulf between rich and poor. I would like to say always to people abroad, keep this in mind. Give us a chance.
Music by South African pianist Abdullah Ibrahim brings our program to a close. From the Nan and Bill Harris studios at WGBH in Boston, I'm Carol Hills. We're back tomorrow.
The World is a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH, supported in part by the PRI Trust for Innovation, which enables informed risk-taking in the creation of new content for public radio. Donors to the trust include the Tagney Jones Family Fund and the Rose Family Fund. By the Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs and their innovations to solve the world's most pressing problems at skoll.org. By the PRI Ambassador Council, whose members include Catherine Harris and the Hegart Foundation. John and Caroline Ballantyne, Blythe Brendan Mann Foundation, and Michael V. and Anne Cerisi, the Luce Foundation's Henry R. Luce Initiative on Religion and International Affairs, by the Ford Foundation, and by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives. GatesFoundation.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.